meeting would like to be moved forward and turn more for the communication.
When we read the Bible, we see that God intended different things for different parts of creation. And specifically, when He made man and woman, He made them for different roles, and He has a vision for what men and women are to do in their life. We're going to begin tonight a three-part series, and tonight's more of an introduction. But we want to talk about this subject. It's a subject today that there's a lot of misunderstanding about, it seems, in our society. A tremendous toll is being taken on, especially on young people today who don't know what it means to be a man or a woman. And there's so much confusion today that's being propagated in the idea of, quote, sexual personhood. And the consequence of this kind of confusion is not good. It means that people are not happy, and this gender-free kind of relations that people want to seem to have today there's consequences that are not very good. The consequence is more divorce, more homosexuality, more sexual abuse, more promiscuity, more social awkwardness, and more emotional distress and suicide that comes with the loss of God-given identity. And so there's a lot of confusion today. And as a result, it seems that a lot of people, young men and women, don't know who they are. They've never been taught who a man or woman is. And a lot of that has to do with families being messed up in a lot of homes, either not having a father or a mother, or maybe there's two mothers or two fathers, and these families are a dysfunctional mess, and they don't have a role model for what it means to be a man or to be a woman today. And so they lack this roadmap for their lives. And it certainly brings itself to be a lot of confusion in sexuality. So society is training young people to think wrongly about gender and wrongly about sexuality, and that there is no difference between a man and a woman. So if you want to change your gender, that's fine if you want to do that. And if you can be attracted to whomever you want to be, whatever seems to come naturally to you. Boys can be like boys, girls can be like girls, or boys can be like girls, or girls can be like boys. You have no responsibility or calling in your life. You get to choose whichever you want to be. But when we look at the Word of God, that's certainly not the case. And we'll say more about that later on in the lesson. But I want to help you get a sense of this confusion that's happening in the world today, which probably a lot of you are already aware of. There's a radical, fast-moving current that has been struck against standards and standard definitions of men and women that have especially risen in the past few months, in the past year. So let me just give you a few examples. On Facebook, you have different options in your profile. You can choose to be a man or a woman. You can choose to be male or female. Or you can choose a custom definition. So maybe you didn't know that. You could choose a custom definition. If you choose a custom definition, you can write in your own gender, supposedly if you're not male or female. So there's also a new pronoun in the English language. No, not just he or she, but now we have the. Z-E refers to someone who does not fit the typical gender binary of man or woman. In fact, on the new Muppet show that was just canceled, one of the episodes of that, one of the characters said that gender is fluid. You know, they stuck that in there. And so that's just propagating this idea. You know, Bruce Jenner receives an award and media praise for his courage because he decided to change his God-given gender from man to woman, and that's applauded. Airports now are changing their signage in the airports to reflect the new craze in
bathrooms, and I don't have a picture of one that's popular right now. It has a depiction of a man, a woman, and a baby, and then there's another image that's kind of half and half that's just like this one up on the screen. The one that's not up on the screen. We'll try that again. So that's the image that you'll probably see that if you haven't seen that already. And maybe you've seen that on Facebook and thought it was a joke that somebody just made that, but it's not. I mean, these are real signs that are going up on restrooms. There is also a college in Massachusetts, and I will not say that again, Massachusetts, but it's Mount Holyoke College. And, you know, traditionally, they have historically been an all-woman college, you know, created back when Ivy League was for men only. And so what I'm going to share with you right now is something that came from their website regarding admissions. Mount Holyoke College welcomes applications for our undergraduates program from any qualified student. Who is male or who is female or identifies as a woman. As a pioneer in higher education, Mount Holyoke remains committed to its historic mission of providing access to excellence for academically talented women regardless of socioeconomic background. The college values each student's development both academically and personally and recognizes that self-identity may change over time. So what is it that they're saying? I apologize for the problems with the PowerPoint. It's not advancing for me, but I'm just going to go ahead and read. Mount Holyoke remains committed to its historic mission as a women's college, yet concepts of what it means to be a woman are not static. Traditional binaries around who counts as a man or a woman are being challenged by those whose gender identity does not conform to their biology. Those bringing forth these challenges recognize that such categorization is not independent of political and social ideologies. Just as early feminists argued that the reduction of a woman to their biological functions was the foundation for women's oppression, we must acknowledge that gender identity is not reducible to the body. Instead, we must look at identity in terms of the external context in which the individual is situated. I know that's a lot of words, but it'll make more sense in a second what they're trying to say. Mount Holyoke College's policy on the admission of transgender students states that it welcomes applications for its undergraduate program from any qualified student who is female. You know, that's their tradition to have female students. Who is female or identifies as a woman? And their website has a question, you know, can you clarify who is female or who identifies as a woman? The following academically qualified students can apply for admission consideration. Let me see if I can pull this up. Here we go. You had to see this. The following academically qualified students can apply for admission consideration. Biologically born female identifies as a woman. Biologically born female identifies as a man. Biologically born female identifies as other. Biologically born female does not identify as either woman or man. Biologically born male identifies as woman. Biologically born male identifies as other, they, or when other they identity includes a woman. Biologically born with both male and female anatomy identifies as a woman. So any of those categories, you can go to school there. The following cannot
apply for admission consideration. Biologically born male identifies as a man. That you cannot do. But what if you change your mind while you're in school? So they've answered that too. They've covered all their bases. If a trans woman decides during her 4 years as a Mount Holyoke student to change her mind and chooses a male gender identity, will she need to withdraw from the college? What about biologically female students who come to identify themselves as male? No, once students are admitted to the college supports them regardless of their sex or gender identity, which is consistent with our current practice. So I have no chance. So I bring all this up, I know we want to mock it and roll our eyes at it, but this is brought up, that this is the growing confusion that is happening today regarding gender roles. And the goal of just this introductory lesson is to bring some clarity, hopefully, to this confusion that's happening in our culture. We need to examine what the Scriptures say about men and women. And hopefully, win people over to a vision of men and women that God intended by showing that God's way is much more deeply satisfying and certainly pleasing to God. It is really a shame that this even has to be talked about. But it is good for us to commit to God's design. And there are a few things that are happening today, that's fascinating about this, is that people are refusing to use this handbook that's given to us by the Creator about their identity and about their purpose. It's a place that we need to use to, about who we are. It defines who we are and what it means to be a man or a woman like God created us. And we'll look at a few scriptures in just a moment. But I want to share with you how things have changed over the years. Those of you that have been around for a while, remember this Time magazine cover in January 20th, 1992. The article is about why men and women are different. And if you look at the cover, it says, it isn't just upbringing. New studies show they are born that way. Hey, men and women are different. And we knew that in 1992. The Time magazine wouldn't, they hate that still available, because that's not their view now. What a breakthrough, this idea that men and women are born different. But culture has tried very hard over the past few decades, and especially the last couple of years, to erase differences. Culture has tried to make men more like women. And you see, that reflected in the way people behave, in the way that they dress, and the clothes that are available. And women want to be more like men, so it's not really that big of a surprise that it's hard to tell the difference sometimes in our society. And so these kind of studies have gone on for a long time. But I want to share with you just a few notes from a man named Paul McHugh, and he's a chief psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins Hospital, and he is not a Christian. But, if he is the chief psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins Hospital, that he's probably pretty smart to be in that role. And regarding all this hubbub today, he says that transgenderism is a mental disorder that merits treatment, that sex change is biologically impossible, and that people who promote sexual reassignment surgery are collaborating with and promoting a mental disorder. Of course, he's very unpopular now. Transgender surgery is not the solution for people who suffer a disorder of assumption. The notion that their maleness or femaleness is different than what nature assigned to them biologically. He also reported in a study showing that the suicide rate among transgender people who had reassignment surgery is 20 times higher than the suicide rate among non-transgender people. He also said that studies from Vanderbilt and London's Portman Clinic of Children who had expressed transgender feelings, but for whom over time 70 to 80% spontaneously lost those feelings. So what he's saying there is that
that there are these children, these young people that may have some kind of confusion about gender identity for a short period of time. But if you wait long enough, they get over that. That 70 or to 80% of them, you know, are not going to carry that out. But today, you know, adults want to pounce on that and reassign them and start treating the boy like a girl or the girl like a boy because, oh, well, look, he plays with dolls. Or look, you know, she's wanting to play baseball or whatever it may be that they think is not the gender identity that... And so they're assuming that there's some confusion. So, well, I'm going to let them explore that. He's saying, don't do that. And he also says, while the Obama administration, Hollywood, and major media such as Time Magazine promote transgenderism as normal, he said, these policymakers in the media are doing no favors either to the public or the transgender by treating their confusions as a right in need of defending rather than a mental disorder that deserves understanding, treatment, and prevention. He said that the pro-transgender advocates do not want to know that these, like I just said, those 70 and 80% of children who express those feelings spontaneously lose those over time. So he said at John Hopkins University, we stopped doing sex reassignment surgery because it's not right. He also warned against enabling or encouraging certain subgroups of the transgendered, such as young people, susceptible to suggestions from everything is normal, sex education, and the school's diversity counselors who, like cult leaders, may encourage these young people to distance themselves from their family and offer advice on rebutting arguments against having transgender surgery. So he said there's a lot of people out there that are taking these young people and they're trying to get them to rebel against their peers or against their parents and go ahead with sex reassignment surgery. He said that there's a lot of misguided doctors who, working with young children, seem to imitate the opposite sex, and they'll administer puberty-delaying hormones to render later sex change surgeries less onerous. And so doctors who think that somebody may be gender confused, they are giving drugs to make it easier for them to perform a sex reassignment surgery later. So there's a lot of things being done, he says, that should not be done. And again, this is somebody who's not a Christian. This is just somebody that's talking about this from a biological standpoint. He said, sex change is biologically impossible. People who undergo sex reassignment surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Rather, they become feminized men or masculinized women. Claiming that this is a civil rights matter and encouraging surgical intervention in reality is to collaborate with and promote a mental disorder. So, you know, go look up his name if you want to read more about that. I find that very interesting that he's saying that this is reckless. This is medically reckless. And our culture is choosing to ignore what people like this are saying, psychiatrists and psychologists, and recklessly ignore the truth and are destroying what it means to be a man or woman. So what does the Creator say? That's what really matters. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, said that God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. So when it says that God created man in His own image, this term man at the beginning of the verse does not mean males, but it means humans. But all people, male and female, were created in the image of God. There's not any other option here. There's just two, man and woman. And there's not a third choice. God made males and God made females. And, you know, psychologists have learned what God decreed from the beginning, that gender change is biologically impossible. Other lessons we'll talk about what it means to be a man or woman according to the Scriptures. But for now, let's just accept what God says, that you were either made a man or you were made to be a woman. We are also made in the image of God. This is the
rest of the sentence in Genesis 1:27 that really means a lot. So God created humankind in His image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Number one, God helps us define that and tells us that we are different than animals. And sometimes people don't behave any differently than animals, but we're made different than animals. Genesis 1:24 and 25, we see that all living creatures were created, and that's described for us in the account of creation in Genesis chapter 1. Let's reread verses 24 and 25. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock and according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So all these living creatures were created. But God does something different when He creates humans. When He made us, He made us in the image of God. Animals aren't described in that way. So animals are not equal to humans, or don't have the same rights as humans. And we should know this, even though that seems to be, you know, very foreign to what people seem to know these days, that there's a difference in humans and animals. But, you know, let's say that I'm having financial trouble and I need to cut back on expenses. And you looked at my situation, nobody is going to tell me that I need to get rid of Jarrell to save money. Then they might say I need to get rid of the two dogs and the cat and any other creatures that I have around the house. That might be helpful for me to say maybe. But no, most people are not going to tell me to, okay, well, Jarrell is the most expensive person in your house, and she is someone that you've got to get rid of her. Nobody's going to say that. You get rid of the fish or the dog or the cat. Even though Jarrell costs more and my children cost more, we recognize that there's a difference in human life and animal life, right? I mean, that's silly. We can't lose sight of that. Animals are not equal to humans. Humans are not animals. So we're different. God created us differently. We have an identity. And what we are is defined by the fact that God made us, and He made us in His image. I'm not defined by my desires. That sounds harsh, doesn't it, when you think about today? What am I defined by? God defines me. I don't define me. And I'm not defined by gender. I'm not defined by sexuality. And that's what people are thinking. That I'm really defined by what I'm saying is I'm defined by God. And people are trying to define themselves through their desires or their gender or their sexuality. It's really a false identity that's just going to lead to disappointment. My identity is in the Lord who created me, and I have to seek my value and I have to seek my purpose through what He tells me. And any other way that I try to find identity is going to be a big disappointment. Not only do we have an identity, we have a purpose. We are made in the image of God. And there's a lot of discussion about what that means. But you can understand that when we're made in the image of God, you know, on a very simplistic level, when I'm made in the image of God, that tells me a lot about my responsibilities and a lot about my purposes. But at a minimum, we can understand this. An image represents what it is made after. It draws attention from what it is reflecting. You know, I'll just use the Lincoln Memorial for an example. You know, we went to Washington a long time ago on a trip with my parents, and I remember the Lincoln Memorial very well. It's very impressive, and you see the statue of Lincoln sitting in that enormous chair. What's the purpose of that image of Lincoln? The image itself is not really that important, but the image is to draw people's attention to Lincoln, the person for whom that image was made. And you know, we're made in the image of God, and so we have a purpose to draw attention to the Lord who made us in His image. We should be reflective of Him, or be a reflection of Him. You know, in ancient cultures,
kings would place images of themselves in the far-off provinces. And if they were not able to travel much to those far-off provinces, they wanted people to remember who it was that was their leader. And so those images told everybody that this land is part of this kingdom. And so when we're made in the image of God, we can serve that same purpose when we live on our, we are a reflection of God. What I'm saying is, Randy is not the point. I am not the point. I shouldn't want to be the point. People want to be the point on their job. They want to be the point in their marriage. They want to be the point in their home. But none of us really are the point. God is the point. If you know what I'm saying. God is the reason that we are here. And a lot of the confusion that people have today on gender roles or whatever it might be is because they've made themselves the point. And they've made them their feelings the main thing. But God is the point. God made us. He made us differently than the animals. He gave us a purpose and He gave us an identity. And we, when we study the Bible and understand how He made us, and when we look at what has become so controversial today, look at the roles that God gave men and women in the Bible, and we're going to do that in the next couple of lessons. It really helps define us. God defines us. We don't define ourselves. But when people don't listen to God, they go off in all kinds of crazy directions like we see today, and it's just chaos. And until we understand this, we'll continue to suffer identity confusion. So that's the point that the Scriptures draw for us. We're here so that we can show God to the world around us. Paul said this in one of the Scriptures we read in our lesson this morning in Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. But now you must put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. So we didn't really note that point this morning, but you note that last part of that verse. The reason that you're going to put away all these things is so that you can be what it is that God intended you to be. He created you with this purpose. And all these things that you are to put away are not fulfilling this purpose. You need to put all those things away so that you can be like the image of your Creator. And so really that's the basis of our study in this series, is that we are different by design. We are made in the image of God. And without that knowledge, you know, we're not going to cut through all the confusion that we see in the world today. If we don't understand why we have been put on this earth by God, you know, we're just going to fall into all kinds of lies and traps that the world is setting for us. We are not to transform ourselves into what society thinks that we ought to be. We're not to transform ourselves into what we think we should be. We are to transform ourselves into what God has called us to be. And that really helps clarify a lot of the foolishness that we see today. So I hope this will be helpful to you in the next couple of lessons. Will be helpful as well. So I again served as an introduction, but I hope that that you'll be able to use this to help maybe clarify this for others that seem so confused by what's going on in the world today. We haven't been talking about what you need to do to become a Christian, but certainly what we have been talking about is that if you realize your place in this world, you know, you're not really in your proper place, and you haven't fulfilled what God wants you to do if you have not accepted Him, if you have not accepted the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. All of these other things we're talking about will fall into place if you submit your life to God. And it certainly will be well worth it in eternity when we can spend eternity with God in heaven. If we can help in any way to do that, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.